My guest today is Professor Bob Ray, director of the Black Chorus here at the University of Illinois. Good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, sir?
I enjoyed the performance very much.
Well, thank you very much.
And if I can characterize it in any way, perhaps the best way to say it is, it's totally uninhibited. And I think that that performance reflects your own life, which is an uninhibited life, and I have to confess, a unique experience for a black professional man in these turbulent times. How did you feel about the performance last night?
Felt very good about the performance itself, and I think greater than reflecting my own personal life, it reflects a lifestyle of black people that perhaps, due to intellectualization, is being sort of rapidly diminished. But I think black people basically are uninhibited. And it's only recently, through all our great, you know, educational advancements, that suddenly we've been put into a sort of great inhibition type bag. But basically, black people are just as uninhibited as you saw the choir and myself were last night.
Yeah, some were even, what do you say, they got happy. Is that how you refer
right,
to that? And
right.
What happens when you get happy?
Well, it's a combination of things that are working on people when they get happy. Theoretically, it's like a totally religious experience in which the spirit of the Lord Jesus Christ is coming down and is sort of filling your body with that spirit. And the release, the only way you can release it is just it's a shouting sensation or a clapping of hands, patting of feet, any way you can let it out, just let it come out. Now, also there's a possibility of, for instance, at a given time you may have problems, pressures pressing you down, and a particular song or mood of a song can cause these things to sort of come to a head, and perhaps that is another situation, the reason for shouting, which is a release. And the early black church, this was the only release the people had. They were being enslaved, being kept very tightly guarded. You did not have the opportunity to release, so it was in church that you could come and just sort of let it all hang out and just let everything happen.
Yeah, so you're some of your choir members then do this during the performance, is that right?
Right, right. Most of, I would say about half to more of the choir, are very religious church people. Attend church regularly, participate very actively in church programs. And so for them, the choir is as much a cultural release as well as it is a religious release also.
I understand, however, that getting happy by choir members is considered quite inelegant by many black intellectuals, is that right?
Quite so. I've had a number of occasions in which the choir has sung at supposedly very high-class, intellectual-type events, in which I've had black people come up afterwards, and in a very, you know, in the very nice, subtle way that they've been taught by the white man, try to put down the choir for this kind of involvement. That it's just not, you know, supposedly, as I said last night, we've come past that point in our development as black people. We no longer release our emotions. We hold them in like we've been taught through the white Western European. And I think it's just really through the Western European culture. I don't think you could say that about many other cultures in our country. I think it's just unfortunate that the Western European culture is the dominant culture, and it has said, you know, you do not release, you hold it in.
You didn't play any Mozart or Bach last night. Why so?
Well, on a concert of black religious music, I don't think Bach would quite make it. You know,
you didn't do any Handel either, by the way.
It ain't relevant.
But sometimes are you reprimanded for this, too?
Well, I think as an educator, I have the obligation to the choir, to the members of my group, to introduce them to and expose them to a great variety of literature, chorally. So that occasionally we will come out and do something by Bach. For instance, this year we did the Elijah by Felix Mendelssohn with the members of the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra and four very fine solos. I do feel as though the choir has an obligation to experience many different types of music, and as their teacher I have to sort of present this to them. But the basic bulk of our repertoire and the bulk of the staples of our repertoire is the black idiom, all mediums, including jazz, rock, gospel, spiritual, and the classical, because there are a lot of classical black writers trained in the Western European school that are writing music, and I think we cannot just write them off because they're writing in an idiom that is not particularly recognized by black people.
So when you go out to concertize, you are just being yourself, you're
right.
Improving anything,
right.
Is that it?
primarily, whenever we do something like the Elijah, we do it down here because I feel as though the community here, the community has a lot of gospel, rock, jazz. They don't have, black-wise, very much of the other in the way of an occasional serious classical work to be done. I think we, the Black Chorus, is doing something to contribute to the community in that sense. But when we go out, a lot of times we're going out to all-white campuses or to schools that are very largely integrated. They already have the situation of having done Bach and Elijah, so that we can present something unique to them in presenting the gospel or the black idiom, whichever we decide to do.
Well, it's a unique experience. I can't recall having ever seen a choir where the performers, as it were, become participants.
Right.
And
right.
Shout. So it's great.
Just
great. And actually, you know, the movement's moving so rapidly, we don't know what to refer to each other as, mm-hmm. and some of the old stereotypes now have become badges of honor. So mm-hmm. let me ask you, are black folks naturally rhythmic or not?
I think that's a very difficult question. There have been studies conducted on, you know, and certainly I can personally testify that even within the ranks of the black chorus, there are some people that rhythmically cannot get it together sometimes. However, I think it goes back to a part of our lifestyle, a situation in where the black man is a very free individual. And I think this is what gives rise to the great rhythmic precision that we have, the fact that we are uninhibited and can let ourselves go. The white culture does not even allow you, it represses all of these things, so that I think it's a situation where the black man is more immediately responsive to the rhythmic thing. As far as the natural, as far as the natural, I'm not really sure. I would hate to even make a definitive statement on that. But I think we are much more receptive to it, and as a result of it, we do it much more readily than anybody else in this country.
What is the relationship between culture and enslavement, Bob?
Well, I think, as I said last night, the only way you can really successfully enslave a people is to remove from them their cultural artifacts. By that I mean their language, taking away the music that is indigenous to them, taking away their art objects, anything that relates to their culture. If you remove all these things, you have managed to somehow enslave their mind. And this is the only way that you can really enslave. You can physiologically enslave, but as far as enslaving the mind, it takes, I think, the removal of culture from them to really get them totally enslaved.
So when we come to black music, we see a unique synthesis, I believe, of two cultures, which helped, I think, to reduce the psychological enslavement. What is that synthesis that is the definition of black music?
Oh, that's a very difficult, it's a kind of hard question to answer.
You talked about the combination of harmonic and melodic structure of Africa's merged with European structures.
There are certain unique things about, as I'm sure we're beginning to be more and more aware, about the African end of music. That is, they have their own system of scales, their own system of melodic writing, their own sort of rhythmic organization to their music. Now, what the black man did here on this continent when we came here, by being forced to hear constantly, we had to go to the white church. So by being forced to hear the sort of thing that happens in the white church with the hymn singing, the sort of German Lutheran chorale that were done quite often, you get a combination. You keep the rhythmic vitality of the African, and as we heard last night, for instance, in the chant, you keep some of the melodic organization. But by and large, you begin to get away from some of the harmonic structures and some of the melodic structures in the African forms, and you begin to adopt certain of the white conventional harmonic patterns and the white melodic structure. So it's a very unique synthesis of these two combinations, and I think really, as far as I'm concerned, it's the only true American art form, original American art form, because the people that were here already derive their cultural basis from wherever they came from, namely from France, from England, or wherever they colonized from. So I think the black people somehow managed to combine both idioms and come up with a form that is uniquely American and uniquely black at the same time.
The role of the church is very important in black music, is that right?
Right. Again, it goes back to the idea that fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, the only place that black people were allowed to be totally free in terms of any sort of involvement was through the church. And therefore, up until about 40, maybe 30, 40 years ago, it was the church that held all the musicological values of black people, that jazz was a sort of fringe area that was, you know, growing out of the sort of church situation. So the people like Aretha, people like Billie Holiday, people like Sam Cooke, James Brown, all got their, you know, basic starts within the confines of the church. And from there, it was a simple matter of expanding upon the harmonic language of the jazz idiom or the rock idiom, and just expanding on the basic thing that they learned in terms of black singing in the church. So it is the church that held all these values for a long time.
I guess this would tie in very well with what you said about black music as a unity, as a phenomenon which embraces all aspects of our lives, as opposed to white music, which is categorized.
Right.
You said certain music for the bathroom, certain music for the dining room. Could you explain a bit more? In what way is black music just one thing? And could you give any examples of that?
Right. I think with the white Western, again, we're dealing with the Western European culture primarily, because that's where basically all of the hang-ups have come from in terms of black people. They managed to categorize music. In other words, you have a music for your church. You go to church on Sunday morning, you listen to one type of music. You come home, you go to have a drink somewhere at a bar, you'll hear another type of music entirely, totally unrelated to the kind of music that you heard at the church. No matter where you go, what the situation is, you have a different form, a different type of music for it. Now, in the black lifestyle, there's a great continuity between all types of music, so that you listen on the one hand at the music in your church on Sunday morning. You might very well go out the next day and have that drink in your local pub and hear the same song with different words, or a very similar sounding song, same harmonic structure and melodic structure, just with slight variations to suit the particular need of that particular time. So I think there is this, in black music, this great continuity. And it's a very unifying force, because black people can understand all forms of black music. You can relate to church as well as jazz.
Can you think of any songs where this has been done now?
There's one song in particular.
Beautiful song. It came out of Nashville. It's called I had a talk with my man last night.
And I think it might have been the Reverend Cleophas Robinson. I can't remember who exactly did it, but turned it into I Had a Talk with God Last Night. Basically the same exact words, just with the change of the word man, you know, to
right,
God.
And the same melody, everything.
Same melody structure, same everything.
There was another one that Ray Charles made famous called Hit the Road Jack. Did you know what that came to in the gospel?
No, I haven't.
Get the Holy Ghost. See, he said,
never
Hit the Road Jack.
Right.
And he said, Get the Holy Ghost.
Right.
Everything. So it's
right.
It's deep, and it, I guess you refer to the whole phenomenon as a melting pot,
right.
Black music as a melting pot. And this gets at a... That's something that I've got to ask you. You know, you had the whole audience united in love last night. They were standing up and clapping and shouting and begging for more. And this was all religious music. So we come to one group of militants today who want to try to take Jesus away from black people. Do you think that this is possible?
Not really. I think the whole black culture, the whole black existence, is very much rooted in Christianity, in the God concept, and in the Jesus concept. And I think what has to happen is that the church has to more actively involve itself in the problem of the streets. For too long, we've afforded ourselves the luxury of the church saying we're going to only deal on spiritual matters, and we've left the very real day-to-day problems of gang warfare, of poverty, of hunger, to someone else. I think the church has to actively get more involved in this. And once this happens, then I think there will be no way in the world for the militants to take away. But I think it's just as a result of the pacifism of the church that the militants have said, you know, the church is no longer relevant. Let's get out of that. That's a white man's game, a bag that he's coming out of, trying to enslave us more, you know.
In looking at it another way, it seems that our greatest leaders have been not just religious, but ministers,
right,
too.
Right.
Seems very often we forget Malcolm was a minister,
right,
Dad.
Right, right. Dr. King, certainly a very fine Baptist preacher. The Reverend Abernathy, Reverend Jesse Jackson, all of our greater leaders now have been some oriented toward the Christian, you know, faith.
So it's like says is as much a part of us as kinky hair almost today. Would that be true or not?
I think very much so, definitely so.
What is the earliest form of black religious music?
The earliest forms that I think are still in existence today in terms of the black religious music involvement is what is known as chant. This is just, it's, for lack of a better definition, it's called unmetered, unmeasured singing, usually led by a preacher. They're the phenomenon of the singing preacher. Usually he would strike out, or maybe someone in the audience just would get to feeling good and feel as though he wanted to sing a song, and he would just light out on this chant. And there, perhaps today there are about four or five still in existence that are commonly done. I think the one we did last night was I Love the Lord, He Heard My Cry. And that's one of the very, very well-known ones. There are about maybe four or five others that are still done in various areas of the country. But unfortunately, they're dying out because black intellectuals have sort of written them off as being not, you know, we've come past that point now. We don't do that sort of thing anymore. We sing the Gregorian form, the Catholic form of the chant, and all of our, you know. My personally, I'm Methodist, so like in the Methodist church, we have Gregorian chant that we sing, you know, at certain points in the church.
There are about four or five chants left, I believe.
There are about, I would say, about four that are still somewhat commonly done. Here in Champaign, I've only heard the one, I Love the Lord. In St. Louis, like, you know, the larger the city, the less, you know, common you find these chants, because even in some of the fundamentalist churches, like your Baptist church, that usually something remains pretty much fundamental in terms of dealing with black music and the black experience in music. Even they are coming around singing more of the Gregorian-oriented sort of chant things. So I would say there are probably about four or five that are still maybe somewhat used throughout the country.
It seems in a way like looking at the chant, spontaneous and unmetered, no accompaniment, just voices. It's like the church service is doing something like what for the Greeks drama did, like a catharsis is effected there. It's a complete purgation, even with tears.
Right.
It's beautiful. I mean, it's much more than a very sterile service that too often is the norm.
And
would this work conversely, Bob? Namely, the smaller the area you get to, the more backward, the more rural it is, the greater your chances of this.
Right. There are some areas, you know, I went to visit some relatives down in Mississippi and went to some outlying small towns within right outside of a large town, and visited a number of the churches there. And in a number of the churches, they didn't have piano. So it was just the old tradition of singing the chants, someone lining out a hymn and just starting out and everybody lighting out. And this fantastic, you know, the difference between a black congregation singing a hymn and a white congregation singing perhaps the same hymn is an amazing phenomenon. I think it's something that everybody should experience. For instance, the hymn Amazing Grace, which, you know, I had the experience of singing it in a white church one time. It's a very beautiful hymn. And then the experience of coming back maybe the following Sunday and singing that same exact hymn with a group of black people, with the richness of voice. First of all, everything goes slower paced in the black church, you know, so everything is slow. All the hymns, the standard hymns that are done in the white church, a lot of them are done in the black church. But just at such a different pacing that it's a phenomenon in itself. I think everybody should experience it one time or another.
Seems to me a tremendous project would be to get some videotape recorders down to these country churches in Louisiana, Mississippi.
I would agree.
It's out of sight. Again, the tragedy of it is those people doing it don't realize what they're doing, boy. Because it's an everyday thing, isn't it?
Right. I had the very unique experience. I had a great-grandmother that used to, you know, I used to sit around and listen to her singing these songs, you know, and at the time, I was maybe in a sophomore in high school, you know. and what is this? You know, like it was something that was totally foreign to me because being Methodist, you know, we have a very highly organized structure. And she would be sitting there humming those old chants, you know, and I would try to get her to, you know, maybe sing them a little bit louder. And she would sit around and still just hum and moan, you know, and it was just a beautiful thing, you know.
Well, let me keep going on. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between a spiritual and a gospel?
I think the only real difference, other than getting into musicological definitions of how the melodies differ, the harmonies differ, and how the structure differs, the only real difference I find is that the gospel is the spiritual of yesterday. In other words, the function that spiritual served in the time of slavery and in the time of the black enslavement, gospel is serving today. The only difference is that the harmonies and the melodic structure of necessity, because the gospel with today's revolution going on, has to be a much more aggressive, powerful type force.
Tell me what function the spiritual served in their day.
Well, in the time of slavery, spiritual served the function of like, in the fields, for instance, the singing. The spirituals are very much related to
what fields do you mean?
Works on cotton fields.
All right, you know?
right on back down to the cotton fields. You know. It was a unification sort of thing. But the problem was that the harmonic language and the melodic language of the black people then was so limited that they did not have at their disposal the sort of thing that we have in terms of dealing with gospel music today. So that it's a much more simple, direct approach to singing in which the melodies are very simple, like Sweet Little Jesus Boy, a very simple melodic structure, Deep River, all of these, your well-known spirituals, related still very much to work songs also, which are much more aggressive. More work songs usually were done while you were chopping, and of necessity had to have about them a certain rhythmic pattern, a beat going. But a lot of your spirituals were sung in church or while sitting around at night, and did not have the great bold aggressiveness that the gospel idiom has. Gospel with its organ. In gospel music you use anything you can. Trumpets, sax, drums, piano, organ, tambourines, anything that you can use. In the Bible, it says, praise God through the cymbals, through string instruments, through organ, through the dance. And black people take this quite literally. So that anything that you have that can be used in the praise of the Lord, you use it.
Well, they took it literally long before its evolution now in the white churches,
right.
Because it has come there where
right.
I go to mass.
Right.
They play guitars. Now.
Right. Black people have been doing that for eons, for years, you know. It's been a basic part of the black existence, black religious music existence.
So how would you characterize gospel, say, writing and singing today? Is it flourishing?
It's very much flourishing. I think last night we did a number. I think most of the songs that we did last night were songs that have been arranged in the last, I would say, in the last 8 years. Everything that was done last night was done sometime in the last, written or arranged in the last 8 years.
I noticed a very great difference in your choir last night, mm-hmm. from their attitude in singing the spirituals and the chant and in the modern music. It's mm-hmm. as if they came alive and started moving.
Right, I think,
whereas before they were more inert, if I can use that word.
I think there's a definite problem of black people today of really getting involved with the more traditional, the older spirituals. The gospel is so aggressive, it appeals much more immediately to our own personal needs today. And as I said last night, the situations that inspired the spirituals have been removed from us. That is, we no longer have the cotton fields or the situations work-wise that the spirituals were written under. So that we do not have that as a basis, and the spiritual has been lifted into an art form. And it's very difficult for black people, even in these times, to identify and relate to that.
So if anything needs to happen, it ought to be a rediscovery of the
exactly.
black church and its pristine simplicity
right.
and warmth.
Right.
Well, tell me, what goes on in a black church on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock?
Oh, well, that's the first thing. As I'm sure you realize, everybody has learned to realize, the black people and the time concept, you know, just don't exist, you know. So as I said last night, perhaps about, you know, most of the time in most of your fundamentalist churches, if it says 11 o'clock, oh, about 11:05, 11:10, maybe even 11:15, after everyone has really been to church for a while, have communed with each other, because, you know, the Christian religion is the only thing that worship service forms is a situation where Christians can get together and relate the experiences that they've had for a week. In other words, coming and telling what good things God has done for them. This is the whole basis. This is why you get together on Sunday morning. Other than that, it serves no real function. You can praise God just as well sitting at home doing your own thing as to coming to church. So the situation exists where black people get together on Sunday morning. They socialize. It's not the situation where you come into a very sterile church, sit there while the organist plays a very sweet prelude, and then the choir comes in and intones this sort of intro, and the choir processes very grandly down the aisle. No, not at all. About 11:15 or so, everybody will get together, and a very alive and vital-sounding processional will take place, in which, like you saw last night. And from that point on, the service just goes.
What if somebody wants to start singing? They feel good, but this is not on the agenda. What happens?
Well, in today's black church, probably this is discouraged, because most of your black churches today have adopted some sort of very rigid format, some sort of order of service, as they call it in the church. But in the older church, and even in your rural areas, if someone wants to get up and sing a song, they just start it out wherever they're sitting. They just light out on it, and invariably everybody picks it up. It's just an understood thing. Somebody feels good enough to sing, let him sing,
Now, tell me about the singing preacher now, which you said is vanishing too. So like the choir, anybody can get up and sing. The preacher doesn't just preach, he sings.
Right.
Could you tell me about...
Well, the whole thing, if you've ever heard a black preacher, a black, for instance, Baptist or apostolic preacher, first of all, the preaching, as we call it, preaching, we get used to hearing lectures. But the old black tradition behind preaching was more a sort of singing, preaching at the same time. In other words, singing a song before a sermon or something, or during a sermon, if you got good and you thought of a song that would relate to your particular sermon topic. But also the tone of voice that you use while preaching is sort of a chanting, a sort of a singing sort of sensation, the actual sermon itself. It can be very definitely related to song in the speech patterns and the way the voice is used.
Yeah, this Reverend Cleophas Robinson is great at that.
He's fantastic at that. Absolutely fantastic.
And it's like a tradition I like to think of the Homeric bards, if I can use a classical example. Mm-hmm. That's where it's at.
Right.
And again, unfortunately, it's dying.
It's dying out. Your black ministers are going to school now. They're becoming more and more educated. And you're getting more lecturers rather than, quote, preachers,
And perhaps in a way this might be a form of insecurity, would you say? This meaning that if you are afraid to go back to your own roots and live them in church on Sunday, you're getting a bit insecure. That's what I meant by that.
Very true.
So that maybe one good trend would be to go back and be what we were in the early days and what exists in its simplicity.
I think that's the whole, the object or the whole thing behind the Pan-Africanism movement is to go back to find out where we are today, go back to where we were and experience some of those things. This isn't saying you have to discard the elements of Western European culture, because myself being a classically trained musician, I dig Beethoven. There's just no question about it. I dig Beethoven, I dig Bach. But I still think one has to recognize where one has come from.
Okay, then, so you have a sermon at some time, and the preacher is singing, and then how does all this end? Oh, when does it end, and how does it end?
Well, usually, like, for instance, if the church starts at about 11, in the old days, and there are still churches, one church here in Champaign in particular, that starts at about 11 and goes till sometime 3 or 4 in the afternoon.
Wow!
That is the singing, the preaching, the testimony, the personal witnessing, all of this takes a lot of time, and no one feels as though he has to particularly hurry or anything. It's like if you can afford to go to a baseball game and spend 3 or 4 hours, you can come to church on Sunday and spend 3 or 4 hours also. So it's that sort of thinking that pervades this sort of situation.
So it ends when they get through.
Whenever you get through, it ends. There's no formalized sort of thing.
Unlike this radio show, we have to end now. I got 20 seconds. I believe that if there's any art form which can bring about a transcendental experience, music is the one that can do it best. I believe that the great musician is a quasi-divine being. I believe with Pop Staples of the Staples Singers that there are some notes one can learn to play to bring about ecstasy, to bring about the religious trance. And I experienced a few moments of this last night with Professor Robert Ray and the Black Choir of the University of Illinois. Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.